Ultimately, I just remember feeling really grateful to be part of a process that allowed me to question. But it really wasn't until like college and graduate school where I really felt like I got to question. So the big sort of dramatic question for me as I started my career was, how can we get that experience for children earlier?
What if story is the answer to our crises of meaning and belonging, to our impulse to heal our lives and help others, to our desire and drive to leave this world better than we found it? Now, we love good stories. In fact, we're kind of obsessed, not just with the stories themselves, but with the stories behind the stories. Their oddly perfect timing, the healing process they provoke in their authors, and their capacity to catalyze individual and collective change. And we love exploring these with writers, thought leaders, entrepreneurs, healers, parents, and others. Tune in to hear these stories behind the stories and entertain with us the real possibility that whether you are a teller or a consumer, story is always offering or leading us to an answer. When Erin and I sent out our manuscript for A Religion of Story, we sent it to a bunch of educators and psychologists and spiritual leaders and change agents, many of whom operate on some of the same paradigms as we are sharing in this book. But as we began to hear from early readers, parents and grandparents, we began to realize that, oh yeah, these paradigms that we've been operating from are not common in our culture. And so we decided it was going to be important for us to host a few conversations that future readers could tune into as they face their own religion of story and the emotions that are going to come up for them along the way, as well as these maybe new paradigms that they're going to have to wrestle with a little bit. So today, we have a handful of incredible educators, facilitators, and trainers who we believe are operating from a more empowering paradigm of education and training. One that really focuses on cultivating the character and the personal freedom that we all need to live happy, meaning-filled lives and steer our culture in a healthier direction. If you are a parent, an educator, a facilitator, or a trainer or a coach, a leader of any kind, really, the insights and wisdom shared on this podcast could change your life and your work forever. I know they did mine. And that's no exaggeration. It's time to go get a cup of something yummy and enjoy these sips of story and sanity with us.
All right. Welcome to Sips of Story and Sanity, where we talk about the stories behind the stories with authors, speakers, educators, parents, and more. My team and I usually have one guest on our show. But we are doing this crazy little thing for A Religion of Story where we are inviting multiple guests who have similar passions, interests, backgrounds, or different ideas about some of the themes that Erin and I talked about and wrote about in A Religion of Story. And so as the team, we have Teddy here today, and we have Lori. And of course, Erin is here, but we also have these amazing people who I'm going to invite to introduce themselves and also share their best guess for why I invited them to this podcast where we're talking about training and education. So whoever wants to pop in first.
You can go ahead, Deborah, if you want. My name is Malise Colantuno, and I live in Silver Spring, Maryland. And I, when I think about my best guests for receiving this invitation today, One that stands out in my mind is that I recently completed my facilitator certification process with the Living the Potential Network. I guess another is my background as a Montessori teacher and also a Montessori teacher trainer. But maybe because Amanda and Aaron know or recognize intuitively that I have a really vivid and visceral memory about my childhood that informs the work that I do with children and families. Also have some experience with things like improv. So that's what pops into my mind.
Thank you. Those were all my reasons. And I can't wait to hear about the early memory.
Well, I'll go next. So my name's Deborah, and I am currently, I'm a teacher now. I thought I was going to be a lawyer back in my other life. I've been teaching different things along the way, stopped being a lawyer to have children, wound up homeschooling them. And then that led me to Village Home, which is a resource center, education resource center, where I got to know Amanda and Aaron. And so now I've been teaching there for, oh, Whitney, how long? Like maybe 11 years. It's been a long time. I think I've been asked here because of that, but also because I happen to have been on a little bit of Aaron's journey with him through mock trial, because I'm the mock trial coach as well. So, and also I love to see where this goes, because my favorite educational memory as a child was I also attended Montessori school before I went to my elementary school. And it was like a hugely formative time for me. So, yeah. So that's my guess. Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. Okay. Professor McGonagall had to be here for sure.
Yeah. Should I go next?
Yes.
Well, it's a great honor to be here, and I love the book. I think the reason I've been invited here is because you were the midwife for my book called Living the Potential, Engaging the Wisdom of Our Youth to Save the World. And the whole concept of what are children here to teach us, and that there's a reciprocal relationship between, and I've got to witness that with you and Aaron, because Aaron is a vital part of the Living the Potential Network. He's my admin assistant and has been significantly resourceful in learning what he wanted to learn to build community together online around the world. So I think that's why I'm here.
Yep. That's why I asked you here.
Thank you.
I can go next. My name is Whitney, and I've also had the privilege of getting to be a part of Aaron's journey. I worked at Village Home I taught there for 12 years in total. Aaron and I met in an improv class that I was teaching, and it was just incredibly fun and such an honor to watch him through that process. It's a very evolutionary process to come in and go, I'm going to make stuff up and not know what I'm going to say next, to, yeah, all right, I'll make stuff up and not know what I'm going to say next. So it's a really internal journey that, if you're lucky, you get to share with some pretty incredible people. And I count Aaron among one of those really incredible people. And of course, I met Amanda through Village Home. I've had the pleasure of meeting several of you through getting to do improv with you through Amanda, which was really lovely, here on Zoom at the very beginning of this whole Zoom thing. What an experiment that's been. So I think I'm here because of that. I think I'm here because I've been an educator for a long time. I recently switched roles. I'm in a more advisory capacity and at a different place now. But I truly value education and learning differently than the way that we have traditionally been thought learning, or been told and been taught, and how we think learning traditionally happens. So that's why I think I'm here. Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Absolutely. Yep. Cheryl, that leaves you. Best guess.
Okay. I will give my best guess. I think it's two things. One, because I study Dr. Deming's work, and he's for a very long time had what I would consider to be a revolutionary idea about education and teaching children. And because I got a hold of his stuff when my kids were toddlers, I raised my kids in a very unconventional way, even though they went to conventional school. I tried to do everything I could to eradicate the effects of grading systems and stuff like that on them, even though they were in that system. So I think I did it a little bit differently with my pumpkins, who are now way grown up. And because I got a hold of Deming Young. So that's my best guess.
That's it, girl. That's it. Transforming education systems from the home front out, I think, is what this whole thing is about. That was the intention around writing this book, was saying, like, how can we do this a little bit differently? Because the way that it's being done generally doesn't seem to be putting our culture in a very good, healthy situation. So what if we started at home with a different approach, and then hopefully see that move into the school? So I'm really excited because all of you have this different frame on the way learning should take place. So you gave me a great idea for the first question, because, you know, this is just like, we're making this up to see where this goes, right? So that initial memory, you know, I think that in order to have the idea, the desire, and the perseverance really to do something differently, like parent your child differently or teach differently in systems and cultures that are set up in a certain way, you have to have a really good reason to do that. And I don't know about you. It's either like something set the bar really high for you when you were really little and you're always trying to get back to that, or something really messed you up when you were little and you're like, I have to figure out how not to do that again to myself or anyone else. So I'd love to hear kind of your, those first experiences for education and what kind of put you on this new track, let's say.
I'm happy to.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead, Whitney.
Whitney.
That's a really great question, because I've thought about it a lot over the years. And, you know, Deborah mentioned, and I think Cheryl mentioned, like, being a mom first and having this idea of wanting to do things differently for their kids. But I came into Village Home not being a parent. I think if I can locate it, it was graduate school where I realized more questions than answers. I have my master's is in the humanities, and it was all questions and no answers. And so reading that in the gray section of the training chapter, I was like, oh yeah, yep, that's it, isn't it? And so moving out here after graduate school, knowing that I wanted something different, knowing that I love teaching, knowing that I wanted to be part of something that had meaning, set me kind of on this path. I actually had a great experience in school. I loved my schooling pretty much all the way through. I had some private school experience, some public school experience, and I had good and bad teachers, but ultimately, like, I just loved learning. I was like, put it in front of me and I'll probably want to learn it. Certainly not everything. There were subjects that I was not as excited about, but ultimately I just remember feeling really grateful to be part of a process that allowed me to question. But it really wasn't until like college and graduate school where I really felt like I got to question. So the big sort of dramatic question for me as I started my career was, how can we get that experience for children? How do we earlier, please? Like, let's just start asking questions and teaching them how to ask questions to find their own truth. So that was my journey.
How about you, Deborah?
Well, I went to a private school for most of my schooling, but my parents very much were, my mom's favorite phrase is ancora imparo, which is I am still learning, which she researches anything. And from when we were little, if we asked questions, they wouldn't just, you know, push us off. They would give us the answer, which my husband and I have continued with my own kids, where even when they were young, you know, we wouldn't give them anything that would scare them or too mature, but we would answer their questions not in a kid way, but in a very adult way. And if you know any of my children, you'll realize that they wouldn't have allowed me to anyway. I think it's the same thing. It's this idea of, you know, we always sought out the information. If we didn't know, it's one thing as a teacher too, and Aaron can attest to this. There are times when someone will ask a question in class and I'm like, I don't know, let's look it up, you know, because, you know, we're not supposed to know everything and we're like throwing it at you as teachers or as parents. We're supposed to be kind of finding the answers together. And my parents were already always, I went to a, my schooling wasn't, I mean, it was okay. It was your average schooling experience. It was nothing to, you know, write home about per se. I had good teachers and bad teachers, but the kids were not really into learning, or, you know, it was more, I was on that end. So I was more in the nerd category, I guess, is what I would have been called at the time. And I think it served me well because I am a proud card-carrying nerd right now. So, yeah, I think it's just, I think what, just to, you know, echo what Whitney was saying, just kind of working it out and asking each other questions and talking is kind of was our philosophy all along. We started my oldest in a private school when we were in Hawaii, and it was great. I mean, we loved it, but we weren't spending enough time together as a family, which is ultimately what made me leave my job, and my husband continued with his. It was just because we could shift the hours. We weren't tied to that, you know, really early in the morning commute and then come back, and we had more time to do things together. And then it just kind of every year we reassess, and we've just continued to do it since then. So my family was all in education. My dad was a public school teacher. I have nothing against teaching. I have nothing against public schools. It's just, I think everybody has to do what's right for them. I think that that's, you know, an important discussion to have as well. So I don't know if that answered it, but hopefully it did. I think it
absolutely
did.
That's one of the reasons why I was so excited when I found Village Home, because I didn't feel comfortable with any of the options that I had, but I also was like, I cannot be his teacher. This is one thing I know. they would not be good for our relationship. I know what I'm good at, and I know that we've already passed the markers for math and science, and he needs people. I don't know how that's going to work, but we're going to figure it out. And then Village Home showed up. So how about you, Marlise? What was your early memory that you were talking about earlier?
Well, a couple of things come to mind. One is just, I do have very vivid and visceral memories of things from my childhood, and a lot of sensory things, and in particular around nature and being out in nature. And then I'll just, I don't know at what point I started to connect this a little bit, but I also changed schools many times, and not just schools, but models of schools or philosophy, you know, schools that had very different paradigms. And I started school early, and I was an early reader. And so I think I was always trying to figure out the system that I found myself in. And also, you know, just by necessity more than by curiosity initially, it was just sort of automatic that started to happen. Eventually I got more specifically curious about it. And I guess one thing that I started to notice was how different some of my experiences in school felt from my experiences out in nature. So that's one thing. And then another thing was that I was able to, you know, I had lots of opportunity to observe the impact and the outcomes of different approaches, not just on myself, but on my classmates in different situations, and started to really have a sense of like what's working well, what's not working. And I think, you know, probably noticing maybe more than teachers had the luxury to, because I could see it, you know, from a different vantage point, let's say, and without the pressures that teachers have on them. You know, at that time, it was just me being a kid getting through the school day. So those two things, I think, really have helped inform, you know, an understanding, sort of an intuitive understanding that I brought with me into my work as an educator.
Yeah. And I love that. Like, I get this little picture of you being a teacher, like 5 years old, watching the room and just being like, this isn't, like, some of these things are working, but some of them are not. It was like, it was already in you being activated.
Yeah. My innovator was busy assessing and solving.
Love it. Well, speaking of blueprints, Renee Beth, how about you? How about you share a little bit about your journey with education and what started for you?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's interesting. I love the term. I say that Aaron is an old soul. You know what I'm saying? It's like he's 18, about ready to be 19. And it was that group of youth that, even younger, if I would have known Aaron when he was 9 or 10, I probably would have woke up a little sooner. But in my childhood, I was the old soul in my family. So I didn't have nurturing parents. I didn't have teachers that were paying attention to who I was. I was a very sensitive, I could feel the energy of everyone. You know, I looked out for everyone. I was trying to save my family. it was very chaotic and traumatic childhood. And of course, when you don't have nurturing at home and you don't have nurturing at school, you know, I guess I would fall into the category of special needs, but I don't think they had that label back when I was in school. Anyway, like so much of life, we learn a lot by how not to do it. Somehow or another, my soul knew at an early age that it would be important to build relationships with people. And so I began to really connect. And Deborah, you might have been a nerd, but didn't really advertise yourself as a nerd. If you would have been in my class, I would have been interviewing you, and I would be interviewing the jocks, and I would be interviewing the cheerleaders, and I'd be interviewing the kids that, you know, are the unseen. Because I just wanted to bring everyone together. Because what? I needed community. I needed community. So I think I was an old soul in so many ways, helping my family, you know, at least create some semblance of normal, at least to the outside world. And then through the years, I became a teacher. And the reason I became a teacher is because I wanted to be I thought maybe a nurse, but back in the day it was like nurse or teacher, right? But I didn't like the idea, you know, I couldn't handle death very well. So I thought, I guess teacher's the option. So I became a teacher, and not only, you know, a high school teacher, which scared me to death, you know, but in a lot of ways, intuitively, I knew how to create a learning model in the classroom that was based on relationship. And that I never learned in the College of Education or anything. So I kept having a vision, but in even doing that, I was one of those popular teachers in Ohio, but the rest of the teachers didn't like me because the kids really liked me, you know, and there was an open enrollment and students could choose the teacher that they wanted. So it just kept looking, there must be a better way. I left education and went into business. And again, every experience has been like, how do people learn to bring who they really are to their lives? And how do they choose their livelihood? And along the way, I met a gentleman in Canada and who had the Wonder Tree Foundation for Natural Learning. I dedicated my book to him. And he taught youth how to be project managers and run their own learning environment. So that is a lot of what I based my book on. And when I met Lori, when I moved to Portland, I'll never forget the day I showed up at her doorstep. Because I actually came to Portland to create a learning community called Teen College. But the charter school bill hadn't passed yet. And just to say that I knew the parents had the power and they didn't know it. And I knew that homeschooling was the pathway. And so when I heard Lori starting Village Home, I showed up on her doorstep because she was creating this for her children. And I could see a conscious parent, the parent that I never had with her children, just like you, Amanda, you know, witnessing your child as your teacher, you know, unfolding from the inside out. And I said, I want to be with you in this community. And she goes, great. How old are your children? I said, well, I don't really have any children, but everybody's children is my child. And I can tell you all about it as we grow together. So that's kind of my journey. I wonder what my life would have been like had I been nourished and supported at a younger age, but it's all worked out pretty well because my vision is to create learning communities now where parents and teachers align in ways in which the youth are part of it. It's intergenerational learning. We're not holding them back. We're actually listening and co-creating and co-generating learning community together with heart-centered relationships. So I'm grateful for my upbringing, even though it was painful. Thanks for asking.
Thanks for sharing. I know I have the similar, you know, I have the similar path of like, mine seemed okay until I got to 18. And then I went to college and was like, oh no. Oh yeah. No. Like someone was either lying to me or something went wrong there. No one taught me how to think critically. So how about you, Cheryl? What was your experience with education?
Well, growing up, I mean, I have a brother who's like, you know, scores on the genius level. So, and he's older than me. So I was always coming behind him. So there was always this really high bar that was set about just the kind of student I was going to be and the grades that I was going to get. And, you know, like he would not try and get all A's and a B. I would try my darndest and get like all B's and an A, or mostly B's, maybe a C, maybe I'd scrap an A in there. And so it was just, you know, but we're different people and we just learn differently. And that was the thing for me, is I liked school fine, because for me, it was just a big social experiment. So I was just into the social aspect of school, and the learning and all that stuff was like kind of secondary to the social aspect. But my parents were heavily invested in grades. So I knew if I wanted to have a social life, I better be focused on what that grade said, because I was going to be grounded if I got anything lower than a B. So there was a lot of focus on that. So when I went to Deming's seminar, I was not trying to be a different kind of parent, to tell you the truth. I really wasn't. But I went to his seminar and I went for business reasons. I mean, I was young and I was at the helm of this business and I knew enough to know I didn't know what I was doing. So I got told, go to the seminar. There's this guy. He developed this thing. It helped Japan turn themselves around after the war. Go try it. You'll learn some stuff. You'll learn how to run a business. And the first two, because I went to quite a few of his seminars, like back to back to back. And the first two, all I could hear is everything he said about the current method of education and how it was harming children. That is all I could hear. I didn't take a thing away about business. All I could hear is his description of letters that he would receive. Like in his book, there's, you know, he talks about how they used to have to send letters home with kids. They would have to send letters home to kids after at report card time to implore the parents to not beat their children for bad grades. And I thought, like, what kind of world is this where we're having to send letters home asking people not to beat their children for, you know, a letter on a piece of paper. And by the way, it's not just the child that generates that letter on a piece of paper, which is, it's an artificial thing anyways. It's those letters on that card are just artificial. There are so many things that go into it, and our schools teach in a certain kind of way, right? But we all know that people learn in different ways. So if we know that people learn in different ways, but then our primary method of teaching is lecture, what about all the other people sitting in that class that don't learn that way? Which I'm one, by the way. I'm a kinesthetic learner. I learn by doing, I learn by seeing, like I learn by mixing it up and being involved. And so for me, everything that Dr. Deming said made sense. And so I just had to try and figure out, like, how can I incorporate this into my parenting with my kids? Because I just thought, oh God, I can't do that to them. And, you know, it's a funny thing. We'd never focused on grades. A lot of parents would pay kids for good grades, which is a whole nother topic. Don't get me started. But one of my kids came home one day and said, hey, my friend so-and-so got paid for X amount of A's. I'd like to get paid for X amount of A's. And I said, oh, okay. Fantastic. What happens if they get bad grades? And my child said, they get in trouble. And I said, have you ever been in trouble for a grade? Have you ever felt any pressure about any grade ever? And she was like, no. And I was like, okay, so you still want to talk about payment for grades? She goes, never mind. So she understood that the implication is, not only do you not get like gold stars when it's going well, but also what you get is help when there's something on a report card. Because to me, that's all it says, is that there's something that's happened here that they need some support around, because they're not able to track in the way it's being taught to them and in that teacher's opinion of what that grade is. And so, you know, for me, it was things that Dr. Deming said that just made sense to me. You know, it just made sense to me as a parent. And, you know, and there were things that he said that just devastated me, and I just didn't want to do it to my kids. So I wasn't, honestly, I'm a little bit subversive, but I actually wasn't trying to be a subversive parent. But the more that I studied Deming, the more I became one. And the parents, I mean, the teachers, I really appreciate teachers, but I wasn't always the easiest parent to have at parent-teacher conferences because I wanted to know about my child, not about the grade. And they always want to talk to me about the grade. And I'm like, well, no, like, are they interacting in class? And what are they learning? And, you know, what kind of help can I give them at home? And like, you know, what's exciting them in class? And they would just look at me like, what? I don't have time because they don't have time. They have way too many students, right? So I just got focused on that. And at home, we mostly just talked about, like, I wanted them to go to school and I wanted them to learn and I wanted them to have fun. That's what I wanted school to be for them. And everything else was noise. And when teachers would get hard on them on grades, I would call the teacher and I'd say, stop telling them their grade, please. As a matter of fact, just don't tell them their grades. I don't want them to be burdened or enlivened by that artificial thing. So just don't tell them. Because they're enjoying your class, and every time they get a grade that says something different, they enjoy your class a little bit less. And I'd rather they just enjoy the process of learning. I wanted them to enjoy the process of learning, and to this day, they still do. They still do. And I believe it is the biggest gift that Dr. Deming ever gave me, and I got a lot of them from studying his stuff. So that's kind of how it went for us.
Oh my gosh, what I would pay to be part of those parent-teacher conferences, just to be a fly on the wall, because I understand it from both perspectives, right? Like, I had those moments of being, I think Aaron wrote about it in the book, where he like came to me, he was like, I feel like they're treating me like a monkey. Like, that broke my heart, enraged me, and also made me smile, because I was like, you know, like, he gets it, right?
That's my kid.
but I also understood it from the educator's perspective, because I had my teaching credential. I jumped into education, and then I jumped like out of it as quickly as I could, because I couldn't figure out how to do it in that system the way that I wanted to do it. I was building relationships, but they wanted the grade. I was, you know, trying to figure out what would motivate them, but they wanted the tests. You know, it was just like, there's no way to get them to what you want without these steps. And, you know, the one thing, I don't think I put this in the book, but there was this one moment where, and I'm pretty sure this was like the moment where I just made the decision, I had to figure something else out for my life because I can't deal with this. This two things happened on the same day. The first one was I was giving out like little happy faces, right? Like with notes on the back, just to let them know that I was seeing them and seeing these little efforts. Cause these were, you know, all the high school students that nobody wanted. You know, they were lighting up pipes in my room. They were pregnant, not telling anybody. They were, you know, like, nobody wanted these kids in their classroom, and I love them. And I was trying to figure out how to reward every little thing, like a wrong answer. Thanks for raising your hand and trying. Like, that was amazing. That was way better than when I got here a few months ago, you know? And so, I did this with this one young woman. She was like 15 or 16, and she broke down in tears and like almost fell on the floor. She was hysterical. And I was thinking, I don't think I wrote anything that could have been that traumatizing on that. Like, I've been trying to empower. And she said, this is the first nice thing an adult has ever said to me. Mm-hmm. And I was like, And then at the end of that day, the drug dealer who was in my classroom came in during a time where he should have been making bank. And he said, I just want you to know that we see that you care. Like, everyone, he spoke, speaking for everyone, because they all knew him, because they were all getting their drugs from him.
Those are my people right there. You know, those are my favorite teens when I work with teens. Yeah, I know. I love them. I love him.
And he was like, I just want you to know that we see that you care and that you're trying. And he pointed out to all the things that I was doing. And he said, but I want you to understand why we can't learn. And he went through 30 different seats in my classroom. He pointed, he knew the story of every young person in there. Okay. This one is pregnant and hasn't told anyone. This one gets beaten up by their dad every night that they go home. This one just lost their brother to a gang fight. This one, like, he was helping his people, his friends, with the only tool that he had, which was drugs. Like, that was it. He was actually trying to help. And I just remember at the end of that day, like, wrapping up my stuff and thinking, like, there's got to be another way for us to help young people not get here. So,
yeah. And I love teachers, just to be clear about that. Like, I love teachers. They're in an impossible situation and a system that is being forced on them too. And they work so hard. And so, I mean, I love mm-hmm. them, and I understand the difficulty that they're in too. It's just a broken system, but it's the conventional system. It's just a bit broken. So yeah, I love that story, Amanda. I love it.
Yeah. And that's why, you know, I've had the opportunity to see what Village Home is doing and see what happened to my son, who had been, you know, kind of dimmed, let's say, by the situation that we had been in with great grandma. And then to watch him step into Village and like come back to life, you know, to love learning again and be taking risks. And y'all even brought out his performer. Like, you saw in that book, right? Did you see how hard I worked for years to try to get him to perform? I should show them the picture, Aaron, of you shaking your butt when you were like 5 years old on stage. And he was at a Montessori performance, and I was just like, oh my God, he's made for this. He was so focused. Can you imagine, like, Aaron being so focused on getting all of the dance steps like just right that he almost couldn't enjoy what he was doing? Like, he was
there's not just pictures, Mom, there are videos.
I was like, this needs to be a TikTok.
Okay, can we make a TikTok over here?
We're stealing that away. Thank you.
Yes, I have some people who might like to see that. I'm just saying.
Yes, you do.
Yes, TikTok. Yes, yes, yes.
So, you know, as a mom, yeah, we have several moms here, like, you see those things in your child, right? And you're like, maybe you're working too many hours like I was, right? Like, it was just like all the things, like, I couldn't do enough. And then what felt like he was in a Montessori school, thank goodness, early on, because he had that kind of like the creative learning environment, the all different ways of learning, and just the flexibility to figure out how he learned the best. And then he could take that when we put him into like the charter school and these other systems that didn't quite fit him as well, but he at least knew how he learned. Like, he could kind of be in the system, but not operate the same way inside of it, sort of. But yeah, I mean, those were always the things where I was just like, oh, I want to figure out how to nurture this in him. And then, you know, Whitney and Deborah show up and I'm just like, yes. So Aaron, it kind of sounds like he's like, I know I'm performing. I know.
I remember, right? Like, the resistance to taking that first improv class, but also like really wanting to. I've never felt that before. And I'm so glad I did. And then Deborah, I'm pretty sure you sent Bridget and Miriam, two of my best friends, to hunt me down and get me into mock trial after seeing improv or something like that.
There was something I saw you, I don't know if it was a class or whatever, but like, I like honed in and I'm like, who knows him and how can I get him on the mock trial?
Yeah. They didn't give me an option.
It's so funny because it's so like, it's McGonagall finding Harry and saying, you are the seeker. Do you know what I mean?
Oh my
like,
God, that's so funny. Yeah. Oh my gosh, that is hilarious.
Like, in the hallway of Village, compare that to the hallway of Hogwarts. It's totally what happened. I actually remember the moment thinking, yeah, we got to make this happen. Yeah.
And I remember my first mini mock too, getting on the stand. And then after, and like, it was just so easy. And it performing had never been that easy for me for some reason. And then it wasn't easy after that, getting ready for the actual competitions, because I think it was because that one didn't really matter in terms of scoring. But you know what I mean? Like, I remember getting off of that and I was like, my mom was right. And I'm going to go tell her she was right in the parking lot. And I'm pretty sure I did. And so, and then, you know, you stopped teasing me like to go perform.
I did. Well, because I was like, well, mock trial is going to be great for him because the kid loves to debate, you know this. Like, I knew that there were certain parts of him that were being nurtured in all of these different places. And I loved watching. We got to go watch the performances in improv class. And I was just like, yes, you know, he took a little more risk every time we went to a new performance. And because we get that benefit at home. Right. We see those snippy little remarks and those unbelievably, like, he got it from his dad. How did your brain put all of those things together that quickly? Like, how did that even happen? Right. So improv, like, obvious. And then I couldn't understand what mock trial was. I didn't have any experience with it. So I was like really trying to sort through this.
It's okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I was like really, I mean, I remember the day where I was just like, okay, so explain this to me again. There's like competitions, you're playing both sides of it. And like, okay, I get it. And then he's like, yeah. And we act it out. And I was like, oh. And he's like, I know, mom, I know. Like, I didn't even have to say it. So, that is one thing, though, that I want to share for our listeners and viewers is this idea that, you know, we talk about it in the book that there was this moment where I had seen that Aaron had, like, his love of learning had dimmed, his love of life had dimmed. There was just too many hard things going on the home front, and there wasn't enough resilience in the adults around him or nurture in the educational environment around him to really, like, keep him buoyed through that time. And so there was this one moment, though, where he was at the charter school, he was about ready to turn 11 years old, and he was just like really upset one day after school. And I asked him, like, why are you so bummed, buddy? And he said, oh, my friend, he turned 11 and he didn't get his Hogwarts letter. And I was like, uh-oh. And on my inside mommy voice was like, maybe we've taken this story thing a little too far. And so, but you know, so I leaned in because it's what I'd been trained to do. Tell me more about that. What would you do if you got a, would you leave him behind? Mom, I'd leave you behind. And what I heard was like this recognition in my child that he knew he had something that needed to be cultivated. He had some sort of magic that needed to be cultivated somewhere outside of what he had right in that moment. And then shortly after, we were having a conversation about his favorite character, and he told me it was Professor McGonagall. And I was like, okay, confirmation, right? My child is telling me I need a teacher who will help me pull this out of me. Unconsciously, he doesn't know that's what he's saying, but that's what I'm hearing. And so now I'm on the lookout, like, where is Professor McGonagall? And it took a few years, but literally she showed up. And it sounds like she knew that he was supposed to be there too. So I just had to give that little bit of backstory, because when we're talking about education and training, I feel like this is kind of one of the core conversations, right? When we look at all of the child development, we talk about nature and we talk about nurture, and like how much of the potential of a child is in the child when they arrive, you mm-hmm. know? And for me, I think because I was in such a broken down state, I wasn't in a state to make any assumptions or go by any, just because someone was telling me something, I was not about to just take that and run at this point in my life. And so I was in this state where I could see him, and I could see that there was something that came with him before he could even speak. It was like, there's this being has a purpose, and I don't want to shape it, control it, manipulate it. Like, I have to figure out how to protect this until he can do it for himself, until he figures out what it is. And I feel like that's one of those essential paradigm beliefs that operates underneath education. Would you all agree, education and parenting in general?
Yes, I have to speak to this because I remember going with Lori to one of the school districts, Lori, the founder of Loop Village Home, and we went to one of the major school districts to meet with people to see how we could help the families within that school district, children that didn't want to go to school, that we could be a solution, right? We actually created a partnership in a way in the very beginning so that we got state dollars instead of parents having to pay. And one of the first signs on the wall walking in there is that parents are the child's first teacher. So the words are there about parent involvement, but in practice and application, parents get involved when they show up at a sporting event or a play or so forth, and maybe parent teacher night, maybe a parent teacher conference, but they're excluded mostly in that learning community, you know, the learning schooling space. And I often thought, how cool would it be if we could all learn together regardless of our age and include the parents? And what I admire about you, Amanda, is that you were witnessing the unfolding nature of this being that came through you, that had his own, you know, he had his own destiny that he was living into, and you were awake to that. And the other thing that's so beautiful, it's like following his interest and his curiosity that inspired your curiosity and probably emboldened you to trust yourself even more, even when there are people around you that didn't understand what you were saying or what you were witnessing. It didn't really matter. You didn't need confirmation out there to confirm your experience of who Erin was becoming in your life. And I just feel that story in itself is huge because it's like one of those secrets. It's magical. It's hidden in plain sight that so many people can't see because they feel themselves, the parents feel inadequate and they're not enough, outsource the development of their children to a system that doesn't know who the customer is. You know, it's kind of interesting, you know, that whole approach. It's like, well, who are the change makers and how are we going to make it different? And I think that is why I fell in love with you. And the first time I met Erin, we were sitting in a restaurant. I just have to share this because, you know, first of all, Amanda really understood my book and what I was trying to share and the whole experience of learning as a new paradigm that we all have to be stakeholders of. You know, it's not just schools, reinvent yourself, please. It's a societal mandate and we have to come together, right? We have to listen to the youth. And Amanda said, yeah, that's right. I really get it. I went, oh my gosh, I'm not going crazy after all. So we arranged this lunch and Erin had taken one of the assessments that we use in our program. And I was sitting down to talk to him about it. And as I was listening to him, they were sitting in a booth together and I was on the other side of it and Panera Bread. And all of a sudden tears just started flowing down my face. It was just, I couldn't even talk. And I'm thinking, here I am wanting to engage with Erin and let him know that, hey, I could be one of your mentors and we can learn together. And I couldn't even talk because I was so emotional about being in the energy of a relationship between a parent and her son that was more than the role of parent and son. There was this recognition of human to human awareness of who we are becoming together. It's like so mind-blowing. I could write a whole book about it. So I just want you to know, for the listeners, there is an energy that's available. And the grandparents might see it before the parents do, because parents are, you know, it's not easy being a parent. So how do we collectively share this knowledge and trust what youth have to share and that perspective? And you've just done a fabulous job of bringing that forward in this book. I really love the book. I've been referring it to people. I can't wait till it's launched.
Thank you. Yeah, well, you know, it helped that I didn't know anything when he got to me. Like, I really was in a state of like, I don't know anything, so we're gonna have to figure this out together. like life had done that on purpose. And so Whitney, I know you have to run early today, but I wanna acknowledge you before you go as like Whitney gave the speech at the end of like the celebration ceremony for one of the little graduations that they do at Village Home. And she got up there and Tell the audience, because like when I heard this, I was just like, oh my God, finally another adult telling the truth about this. Do you remember? You remember what I'm talking about? You probably say it all the time.
I do. I think I said we're all making it up.
Yeah.
So I think my ultimate message was like, no one has it figured out, you know, so trying to attain this goal of, yeah, you know, go out into the world and figure it out, because it's, I believe two things. One, everything is figure outable. But I mean, eventually, like systems and processes and learning computers or whatever you want to learn about, you can probably figure it out if you just stay with it long enough or tinker with your hands long enough, right? But that no one ultimately has it figured out. So that was my message. Oh, good. My dog's going to bark now. It's good timing. Yeah, it's great. A little improv for you. I do want to share it with about Erin's journey and just a little bit about real quick before I do have to go, and I'm sorry I have to leave early, a little bit about where things are at for my own daughter right now in relation to Village Home. One, I want to say in Erin's journey, it was so amazing to watch him go from a kid who was trying to figure it out and get it right, to being willing to jump into the unknown, because I think it's a theme that comes up continuously throughout your book, which is we don't know. We are parents or we're teachers, and like Deborah said, you may just have to say, I don't know. And so you rely on that, on the questions to lead you down different paths, you know, and Erin, I thoroughly enjoyed watching him work through this process of trying to get it right, which many young and new improvisers do, because it's so uncertain. It's the gift in improv, is that it teaches you how to be in uncertainty and just be like, all right, great. And I remember the moment where I knew he was going to be okay, because he turned and looked at me and he goes, shut up, I know. And it was just so lovely, because again, there was this relationship that we had where like, that was okay for him to do that. He felt safe looking at his teacher and going, shut up. I didn't take it personally. It was hilarious. It was super beautifully timed. And so we developed this rapport very quickly that I'm still grateful for in my life, that we're able to have real conversations that don't stand on ceremony or, you know, the formal titles and things like that. So that's been a real gift in my life with Erin at Village Home, in general, in teaching, because I think it gets in the way. I think things like that get in the way of the real relationship. When you can't, if a kid can't address you by your first name on some level, or, you know, in a way that doesn't feel so stiff and formal, it's going to be difficult to go anywhere else. Learning is vulnerable. It's vulnerable. You're wrong, or you're bad at it until you're not anymore. And it's really difficult to be able to exist in that space where you're willing to be vulnerable if you can't be real with the adults and the kids in your life. So that was an early moment with Erin where I just really appreciated immediately who he was. He was not afraid to give it right back to me, and I loved it. So we have maintained that relationship, and I'm super grateful. The other thing I just want to say here is that my daughter is now in a public school. She's 9 and a half. She was born and raised at Village. Because I was a teacher there before I had her, it's kind of the opposite of the majority of the stories that happen at a place like Village, or with self-directed learning, of like, I started in the school system, realized it wasn't for me, and moved out. We went the flip side of that, because circumstances in my life and in our lives dictated that I needed to be the breadwinner and go have a big job. And so she's now in public school, and I got to share this because I'm so grateful to Village, because she has the foundation of being a critical thinker. That, you know, first couple weeks of school, I'm watching real closely. I'm like, how's it going? And she's like, she came home after the first couple days of school, and she's like, I have a list. So
If you know Lila, you know this was said perfectly, yes.
So yeah, I mean, like, really seriously, it was like, I have a list and I have questions about the following things. And it was very much the things that she appreciated. And I heard, you know, Marlisa's story of like, there were things that were serving her. There are things that she recognizes, like, do serve her in terms of what that school has to offer. And then other things that are totally not, she calls BS flat out, you know, and all of the things that she's calling out are completely and totally tied to her autonomy as a human being. Mm-hmm. That's what I've noticed. It's not the subject, it's not the how they're doing it, the methodology. It's, she can appreciate that people, you know, that she's like, yeah, I had to sit a long time to listen to stuff about clouds that I already knew. But she really, for her, it's like, why can't I go to the bathroom when I need to? You know, these are the things that matter to her. These are the things that she's looking out for in her classmates. And she's saying, yeah, but he really needs to go, you know? And so I'm proud of that. Like, I'm really grateful and proud to know that if it did have to switch this other direction, like, it still applies. Mm-hmm. It still applies, that foundation of like knowing who your children are, believing that they're a full human being, even as they're, you know, a small child, and not just a vessel to be filled. Guidance, absolutely. Questions, yes, please. But this idea that they need to be completely filled by you or by school or by society or by whomever, you know, knowing that, trusting that early on, I'm like, there's a part of me that's like, phew, I'm super glad I was not crazy there in the beginning, because now we are in this situation that, and it's a great school, love, you know, good people, super glad, but it's still the system, you know, but she has that foundation. So it's worked the other direction for us.
I love that story because, you know, a lot of people have been asking me, like, what is this whole preserving freedom part of your subtitle? Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what that is, right? Yep. Because if we don't give our children the opportunity to have agency over their bodies and what they learn and who they hang out with, who they spend their time with and who they learn from, then what are we doing? Like, how do we expect them to be good humans with good character and good citizens in a culture that needs more agency, you know? Mm-hmm. And so thank you for sharing that story, because that really is, like, for me at the core, it's one of those things that I feel is more like one of those grassroots-y things that will, like, mm-hmm. people will eventually go, oh, that's what she was saying, you know, because you have to have that moment with your child when you're like, oh, they have a list. That is fantastic. She's mad because they won't let her go to the bathroom when she's got to go. You know, like, you're the parent who's like, yes, I'm going to call the teacher, right? Like, what's this about? Like, that gives us those are the ways that we actually are able to affect change in a system. Maybe it takes longer, but it's with the little humans getting their own sense of agency. So yay, Lila.
Yeah. She often comes with a list of demands. I'm just glad in this case she was using her powers for good. So she's very strong-willed. I want to thank you all for having me here today. Thank you for all of your insight and your wisdom and the things that you share here and with each other and out in the world every day. Erin, I adore you. I'm so happy to see you. Let's please stay in touch. Amanda, thank you so much for having me today. I'm so sorry I have to leave.
Thanks for being here.
It's been really lovely.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. Right back at you.
Yeah.
I'll see you again.
Bye.
If I can just add two things to that, I'm going to follow up, Whitney. So I have a little bit of a different situation, but I had my two oldest girls now, one's in grad school, one's in college. And so I can kind of mimic what Whitney went through and tell you that when they went to college from Village, and they also took some early college credits and everything, they would stand and would just be amazed that there were other students coming from traditional school and coming from high school that had no idea how to even do the most basic, how to contact a professor, how to speak to an adult, how to do, you know, so they learned all of that both through their parents' involvement and, you know, through Village Home, which I, you know, I'm a huge proponent of as you can probably assume. So it goes both ways. No matter where you get that, where you learn that, whether it's Lila who got it from, I was carrying Lila before she could walk, you know, from zero to eight, or whether it's, you know, you start whenever you're 8 to 16, I mean, you still get the same benefit, I think. And the second thing I want to say is that, to follow up with what Renee was saying earlier about, you know, how do we cultivate it? And like, Amanda, clearly you saw something in Aaron, and I can imagine, like, I try to imagine Aaron as like a child, and I can picture it. Honestly, I can't, Aaron, after spending time with you many, many hours on in competition, but especially the book, what I've learned through the book is how you interacted and how you kind of, you know, built that foundation, talking about things and encouraging him to find things out for himself. Not everybody gets that, you know, wherever you are in life, but I think I can speak to having watched him. He then shares that with others. So others who are not capable of, you know, maybe, you know, being the same way, asking the questions, kind of pushing forward, trying new things, challenging. He has the confidence then, at least I've noticed, to encourage others to do the same. So it's not just an insular thing. It's not just Aaron learning this and Aaron doing himself. It kind of spreads out, and it kind of, you know, that energy is given to others as well. And he is great at that, actually. I will echo what Whitney said. Aaron, you know that I adore you as well. It's just been a joy watching him, but also watching his interactions with others and how it kind of spreads, you know what I mean? It really does. And, you know, of course we're lucky that they were all in a place where, you know, that's fostered, right? Because it's they choose what they want to do. They choose to be there. But I think it's evident that it does, you know, kind of, it spreads out. It kind of is contagious, I guess, is the thing. I don't want to say the word contagious in a pandemic, but in a good way. It's a good kind of contagious. Yeah. So, but yeah, so I just had to say that because I think, Renee, you were asking, like, how do we cultivate it? I think, you know, if we can just plant little seeds here and there, which Amanda, you clearly did, you know, as Aaron was growing up, that spreads, like the seeds kind of, you know, I don't know why I can't think of the tree now. I'm not a science teacher, I'm a history teacher, but you know, there's some tree that drops the seeds and it spreads and more grow, right? Aaron, you can help me out there. I don't know what I'm
No, my mom and I both hate science. Well, not okay, hate, but you know, like that's not our thing. So I don't, okay, I don't right. really know.
Well, you know, take some analogy and put it in there and you understand what I mean. Yeah. Okay.
Well, and that's one thing that I really, really appreciate. I think not just about mock trial, but your other classes, Deborah, like you, I know you put an emphasis on the veteran students helping out the newer ones, and especially in mock trial. And like when I had that experience, that was so incredible. I think I had primarily I was working with Ashley, Karina's older sister when she was still at Village. And that was really cool. And just having that experience of there being no separation between the students and then the students and the teacher in that way, and like being trusted to be able to teach each other the things from each other, and maybe things that maybe you wouldn't have thought of or likewise, you know, that's just really cool. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's really good. And like, as they become, so like Aaron then became more experienced and he would be able to help out like this term, especially we had some new people coming onto the team. So Aaron was able to say, this is how we do it when we're a witness and this is what we do. And this, and so I think that's really valuable. And that's one thing I like about Village is we have multi-age classes because it's not just in mock trial, but like, my Hogwarts class that I teach is like from 11 to 18. So we'll have 18-year-olds in there hanging out with the 11-year-olds and they're just having a ball because they all have this love of, you know, Harry Potter and they can share with each other. And you just gain so much more than just being told you're supposed to only interact with these people that are this age. And, you know, that's what you're supposed to do. But yeah, no, I mean, occasionally, you know, as you know, you have to step in and well, maybe do it this way because sometimes, you know, there's overzealous teaching.
We go into rabbit holes.
Yeah, you know, so like, let's come back and, you know, but you can do that in a way that then both of them learn, like the experienced and inexperienced or the new and the old, you know, they can learn new things together. And it's actually a good lesson whenever, like, someone who is experienced as teaching and saying, you know, this is how you should do it. And then you come in and like, let's look at it this way. How can we, and then they learn together and you realize that you don't know everything just because you've done it. Right. You know, I think that's an invite because mm-hmm. I'm still learning. Geez, I don't know what the heck I'm doing half the time. Right. But just because you've done it doesn't mean you know it, but it's like that whole learning process together is just, it's an amazing thing to watch. It really is.
Yeah. That's what I like doing last year during that. I think the last spring scrimmage is really cool when having the experience of the new people coming into mock trial yeah. and understanding where they're at in certain phases. Saw myself in them a lot and being able to tell them the tips and tricks
yeah.
that maybe you don't get to until you kind of figure it out later. You know what I mean? From your perspective, yeah. that was my favorite thing to share with them. Be like, oh yeah. And then I'd see them, you know, some of them even like this next year, I was like, oh my gosh, they did it. They made it, you know, yeah. they did it.
Yeah. Really- and we've been doing that more. And with each year, they start off at a higher level. I mean, it's been really, really cool to watch. Yeah.
So. Yeah. Well, and I mean, even from the standpoint of like this morning before this podcast, we had Lori facilitated her first workshop online. Right.
Oh, wow.
And so we've been playing in the training and the teaching and the facilitating space, right? Like we were having those conversations as adults trying to help other adults on the learning journey, right? Like, okay, so we're going to have people like Teddy who have been, you know, on this journey for 10 years and are very comfortable falling into a puddle of tears around a particular topic, right? Then we're going to have the new people who are like, emotions, what? Like, that's not what I came here for. Yeah, actually, that's why you're here. And, you know, and so like, how do we, right? But then that becomes part of the conversation, even as I'm helping messengers and coaches try to figure out like, how do we do this in a broader sense when we're working with people who have been raised in a system where they are just waiting for an answer? Like, what if you ask them a question? Well, they don't really like you very much at first, right, ladies? They get mad. they
a little bit.
A little bit, right? So, but I love that. Okay, I wanted to just kind of like pull that in as far as like, this is true learning at every level. And the adults, as adults, we have to unlearn some of those things as the learners, and especially as those who are acting as guides and facilitators. Like as the learners, it's okay to not it's okay to not have all of the answers, and as the facilitator, it's okay to not have all of the answers. You know, it's just that unlearning that has to take place. And one of the things that I want to point out because of what you were sharing about mock trial is, you know, having people who are, because of the perception, right? Like young students step into mock trial and they see the people who are 4 years into this and are just like, oh my gosh, right? They're just like, but imagine if they had to learn everything just from Deborah, who's been doing this for decades, right? That level of intimidation might just like be too much for them to, even with all of her attempts to level the playing field, be curious, right? Just the amount of information and experience she has. So putting the people in between, right? I watched that in all the training programs I was in. I was always the first one in. I was always in the first iteration of a program. And so I was always feeling paralyzed and intimidated because the people who were facilitating me, even though they were masterful, were like too smart. They knew too many things. I felt like I couldn't keep up. But the second year when I had stayed involved, and then I got the opportunity to step in and kind of create that bridge between the mastery and the beginner, oh my gosh, those people move so much more quickly. It was ridiculous. So now, you know, it's just such a, I'm sure there's plenty of research that shows all of that, but by experience, I know 100% that that is like one of the most powerful ways to learning. Right, Cheryl? She was in that training program with me.
Yeah. I mean, all of us, right? Like, geez, we were all having
you know, falling out and having breakdowns. And I was actually thinking about it, like, you're very onto something with that, Amanda. And it's something that I've been seeing, like, if we look at training, like when we do, you know, cause like my two mentors in the business world are my father and then his teaching partner, Hiro Hakkebord, who both studied under Deming. I mean, I did too, but they did it differently. And it's one of the things that I actually see in our seminars is when they are at such a level of mastery that when people ask a question, the answer that's given is from the theory standpoint, the most correct answer. Theoretically, from the perspective of being absolutely 100% the theory, it's right. The student cannot hear what they're saying because it is so far advanced from the life that they're living right now that they don't understand what that answer means. So, you know, like to say, well, just abolish performance reviews, which Deming said all the time, like, don't do performance reviews. And so what people don't understand is, well, what am I supposed to do instead? Because they feel like there's an instead, and there is an instead. But when the answer comes, and even Dr. Deming was a little bit guilty of this, he would just say, well, it costs you nothing to stop doing something that's wrong. Now, that is the answer. That actually is the answer. But the part that always gets left out is if you spend time working with your people, creating processes, learning about them, learning about their life, learning about their learning styles, and you're in the work with them day in and day out inside of the business, you'll know everything that you need to know. And a performance review is ridiculous. You don't need it because you already know what you need to know to remove the barriers and help that person. So that's the thing that's in between. Stop doing it. But I'm attached to it because I don't know what else to do. And so there actually is an answer that's in between. It takes longer and it's a whole approach to something. But the accurate answer is it costs nothing to stop doing wrong things. Like that is in fact the answer. But then there's this thing in the middle, which is what people are hungry for, to be able to let go of the thing that they're being asked to let go of. And so if we don't give people a meaningful answer as to something that they can hold on to let go of the thing that they're very attached to, it just, the answer just sounds kind of arrogant. And it's not what the masters mean when they say it. It's not what Dr. Deming meant when he said it. He wasn't meaning to be arrogant or to have it land as arrogance. But when you're in a place and you're attached to something, that's what it sounds like because you have no point of reference. And that's the thing that I see sometimes with people that have real mastery in an area is they give the most appropriate answer. The bridge is missing. Mm-hmm. And so what you're talking about, like at this point, that is one of the things that like I have talked to my father and Hiro about is perhaps you guys need to let me be the person that starts answering questions in seminars. Mm-hmm. Because your answers are so correct that everybody's lost. And it sounds silly mm-hmm. to say that, but it's so true. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think there is that piece in there that's like the in-between. And I think it can happen in education too, you know. I think it can happen in school systems too. Like you were just saying, you know, sometimes, you know, professors, I had a professor in college who had his degree in constitutional law with a focus on the Fourth Amendment. I'm like, and this is who's going to teach me history. Like I felt sunk before we even started because I knew there was a level of mastery that he had and his expectations were very high. And, you know, history wasn't necessarily my thing. So I think that there is like this in-between place that it's good for us all collectively, the masters, the new learners, and the people that are somewhere in between on the journey where we can all scaffold each other up. And the people who really have to embrace that, love you, Dad and Hiro, but the people that have to embrace that are the masters.
It's true.
Because otherwise people get left behind. They just get left behind. And it's not the intention of the master, but it's what happens. It's what I see repeatedly.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, for me, I mean, we learned that in the space that we were in was the importance of having someone in the room who was a little bit behind, but also kind of knew the work just enough, right? Because you're going to ask a question and you needed someone who could answer with the right amount of willingness to go to the emotion of this, you know, the prompt that we were giving them, but also, you know, truly be in it for themselves, you know? And so, but it does, as, you know, someone, even when I think about Deming and I think about, you know, mastery, and then I think about what's happening currently in my own business, it's like, what happens when you have to straddle all of those things, right? Like, I have mastery here. I feel like an infant learner over here. And hopefully I have done an okay job with the people around me that they can be like, oh no, remember how you did this here? Like, let's do that again, you know, because it's really because I still go to that place of conditioning that I was in as a child. I'm either right or I'm wrong. I either have the answer or I don't. No, I have a lot of answers, and I also don't have a lot of other ones. And what if I can like remember my mastery and not go to this place of not enough for the particular situation that I'm facing, and bring all of me to that moment. So I love that we were able to kind of bridge like school and the messenger training and even the business piece of really understanding, like, we're all at these different places in our learning journey, and we're all at different places in different areas of the learning journey. Over here, I got a lot of mastery. I can help. Over here, and it's all okay, you know? So that was one of the things that I loved about your room, Renee Beth, when we finally did the live experience with your garden experiment, was how you did that, the life spiral. And you opened up that conversation around like, oh, we really know some things when we're here, but also you want to share that experience that we had with the one with James. Just really, it always comes to mind of, you know, his experience of realizing like, oh, it's okay to be where I'm at.
With Hakeem and Fahim?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we have, you know, it's like experiential theater in a way. When you draw out a life spiral, it's like the Fibonacci series on a pavement with different colored chalk and so forth. And we've done that a lot of the trainings in the development of learning communities, where we really want people to understand the wisdom that unfolds. Because if you look at the Fibonacci series, you know, it starts, you know, it's 1 and then 3 and then 5 and then 8 and then 13 and 21. It moves around the spiral all the way out to, let's say, 144. So we have people stand on this. There's lots of exercises to do here. We've done them online and we've done them in person, but the one she's talking about, we did it at a live event in Washington, D.C., and Marlise, you were there. It was awesome because there was a father and a son that were part of the group. And the son is like an infant adult, you know, he's just graduated from college, and his father is, you know, on his way to a young elder. So they're standing at different points on the spiral, and they're having a conversation about, you know, what was it like, you know, to ask the son's experience, you know, what was it like for you, you know, to where you are now and where you see where your dad is, and what questions do you think are going to unfold for you on your journey, and how do you see your dad on his journey? Some question like that. And then for Fahim to recognize his son on a journey that's his, and that he could trust that that unfolding process was natural and occurring and in community. And that as a parent, I think I felt like the weight lift off his shoulders. Isn't that what we experience? Mm-hmm. It's like he realized like, oh, this is all handled. You know, we're all part of nature. Fibonacci is in every part of nature. My own sun is unfolding. This is a perfect place. I can enjoy the experience as opposed to coming from the pressure of what if this, you know, from fear that a lot of parents feel. Is that what you captured as well?
Yeah. And there was this moment right before the relief where he paused, because the question that she asked was, and what would you tell yourself if you were his age again?
Right.
Oh, and there was this long pause. And then he said, don't listen to your dad. Like, yeah, do your own thing. So it was this unraveling moment of realizing, like, oh, I got stuck in that same freaking pattern, even though I've been doing all that I can to try to cultivate this young person. Like, he's obviously an amazing dad, amazing son. Like, it was beautiful. And then there was this one element where he was like, ooh, I can let go of this.
Right, exactly.
But, oh, like, that realization. Yeah. But the thing that I love about that spiral is that there's that the infant adult for every part of the spiral you get to, right? Adult, elder, I don't know what they are, but yeah, there's the infant and then there's the actual state. So infant, adult, and then mature adult. But then right after that, you go to infant again in the next phase. And so there have been these moments in her garden experiments where we have seen people of all ages. And one of my favorites was with a teenager from Village who was on, he was like, oh my gosh, I feel so much better because I just realized that the reason why I'm so overwhelmed is because I'm an infant again. Like, I just finished high school and I felt excited because I felt like mature, but now I'm looking at college and I feel like this big compared to this thing that I'm stepping into. And so it was just this like beautiful recognition that, you know, even in the other direction, how many times has Aaron heard me say, like, infant leader, dude, right? You're witnessing this right now in the moment. Really, really, yeah, how many years do we have, right? How many times have you seen this though, where it's been like, oh, I don't know what I'm doing here. Like, I'm new, I have mastery here and I'm new in this space. And I don't know, for parents who are listening, I really want every parent and educator and leader to feel the lightness, the ease, the joy of being able to not have to have the answer and to let the people who are quote unquote behind you see that every phase of this journey has a very messy, messy middle learning experience. And if we don't show them that, then when they get to their own messy, who do they talk to? Right? Like, if we've painted this picture that, oh no, it's all simple. Like, we just did that. We just became a leader and figured out all of the systems and, you know, it was a piece of cake. Aaron's going to be like, nope. He knows with every leader he works with. Yep. My mom was on the fetal position, in the fetal position underneath her desk. Like, I remember this. This is okay. This is normal. I've seen it. I've had my own identity crisis. We're good. You know? And then when he gets to his own space where it's his own enterprise that he's building, and he gets to that, like, it's going to be okay. He'll be able to say, like, mom, remember that fetal position? Like, I'm there right now. That's what I really want for every learner and especially every educator, parent, adult, because it just makes it so much easier. I do not have to pretend. I don't have to pretend.
What makes it learning is a journey. It's a growth experience. And it's not over until, you know, when, you know, it's like climbing that mountain, you know, like if we think of Lori and your runs up the mountain and so forth, you get to the top of the mountain and you go, oh, there's another one, you know, and it's not like I've arrived. It's like, no matter where, there's another learning edge. If you're willing if you're willing to do it and be authentic and share and ask for what you need along the way, as opposed to getting your checklist of destinations without fully embodying the learning journey, because who we are becoming is it's not a static event. It's dynamic. And that's what I love, what I heard Deborah was saying about her classroom, where she's got 11-year-olds and 18-year-olds in there, and they're in there because of the energy of what Harry Potter and all of that was about in terms of rediscovering the magic. And it's like, it's already present. It's hidden in plain sight. So let's tap into it. I love, you know, one more thing I want to say about your book is that I wonder how many parents or people that watch TV or Netflix or whatever it is, it's your escape thing that you do, and you're just in this space of entertainment and moving away from whatever it is that you're trying to let go of for whatever reason. You just need an escape, right? What I love about your, what you and Aaron discovered is your conversations around the journey of these heroes and what that all means in terms of a life journey and process and the character that's unfolding and how do you see that in your own life? Because a lot of people, you know, the wisdom is present if we open to the conversation. And I just was inspired by how you did that. And it makes me want to watch all those movies that I missed because somehow I was trying to escape or was being entertained and I didn't really catch the whole story of the character. And I'm a former English teacher. I'm really looking for character development and everything. But I'll tell you, I want to watch some of those, especially like Dead Poets Society. I love that movie. Mm-hmm. And I want to rewatch it for the reasons of who I have become now, which is different than who I was when I first watched that movie. So thank you for all those suggestions.
And I will tell you that the reason that this book, like from the beginning, just like it kind of hit, because I think I, like not consciously, I've been doing this with my kids all along, but in my classrooms, I can tell you definitively that if there is ever a moment where I can explain a more difficult concept using some of the same lessons and characters that you talk about in the book, and I can tie it back to one of them, it's like the light bulb goes off, and because it's something that they're familiar with and it just brings the fit. So it's like you can take it the step further too, which is what I want to love even more. But even in that brief moment, if you can tie it into something and think of it as something that you know, it works. It totally does. So
yeah. Well, and I think that that's one of the things that we've talked about a lot in these conversations is this idea that we're made and wired for story and with story, right? Like, so you're intuitively doing it because it's like the oldest thing that humans have done is tell stories and use examples to teach wisdom. And so intuitively, so many people are doing this. And what if we added that extra dimension and really pulled out all of those themes? So because a lot of people are doing this. They just don't know that they're doing it and they don't have that level of awareness that could take what they're doing to a whole new level.
Oh yeah, I'm using this in my classes. Like that gray area, like I love it. Love it. Yeah.
All right. Well, I just looked up at the time and I'm like, oh my gosh, I could keep talking forever, but I want to honor all of your time and our listeners. And so I would love to just have a quick round of some final thoughts, some tidbits of wisdom or reflection or ahas or whatever's up for you. So anyone who wants to.
I would like to share that I have mixed emotions, right? Like I'm super sad or angry or frustrated that I didn't grow up with this, you know, and that I was in such a crummy state or place when I was raising my kids that I didn't recognize it and that I did the don't hate me. I did the pay for the aid and the, you know, like we did that. And so for me, that makes me frustrated with myself, but I am so grateful that I now have grandkids that I can help my kids transition to, and that as I'm learning to be a facilitator, that I can implement that in this piece. So I'm so grateful for all of you that already have it and get it and that are helping me to learn how to do it.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that, because I know that's going to be a thing. I know, like, this is why we have the workshops for the parents before they hang out with their children, is so they can unpack all these feelings, because it's for reals, right? Like, when it's how I felt when I was 18 and I was so angry that no one had taught me how to think critically. And now I understood why I made all these crappy decisions. It was just, it's a lot to unpack.
And Cheryl, thank you for the comment about evaluations. I had not pieced that. I'm like, okay, I get now A, B, C, do it this, you know, I get that. But I never even thought about, I just did an evaluation for the gals in the office at work. Okay. Okay, light bulb. We're going to do that differently from now on, you know? There are better ways. Mm-hmm. Get stuck in those patterns.
Mm-hmm. I'll just say thank you for this. I just enjoyed listening to everyone. Thank you for including me today. And I love the book, so I'm excited to see how it can touch other people and teach other people, and just encore it and paro everyone. Just keep learning every day and keep asking the questions. But thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for being here.
I would just say, you know, I love the suggestions at the end of each chapter. And the chapter themes are so appropriate for the times we're living in today. So I'd say, who is this book for? You know, I'd say the book is for anyone that really wants to live their authentic life in relationship with their family, with themselves, with their larger community, that there's so much wisdom that's available if we stop looking for the one right answer and we just be open to the question. And then this is a beautiful time of year. It's nature. We're part of nature. So as we watch the world come alive with spring here, it's almost like we're unfolding. I think this book helps us unfold our awareness and open to some new practices that can really deepen our relationships in a powerful way. I see it as a resource book. That's not, you read it for fun and you go, darn, you underline, whatever, you go. You got post-it notes, like, I'm going to pull this out for this reason. It's like, there's so much wisdom in this. It's so real. And I don't think it lives anywhere else. It's such a great compilation of intergenerational learning that can impact our humanity to become more awake in the perfect time. Thank you.
Thank you.
I really enjoyed everybody's comments today as well. Thank you.
Marlies? What are you thinking? We haven't heard your voice in a minute.
Well, I just really appreciate the power of community and the power, and I should say the power and possibility of that, and the power and possibility of storytelling, and that recognition that, you know, we're in some way built to have that exchange, you know, to gather in a circle, and that's a really important means of transmitting wisdom and finding and cultivating our own wisdom. And what a great act of love that is to share that with one another. You know, that increases the possibilities for all of us. And I'm really grateful for the people who are willing to gather in these conversations, grateful for this wonderful use of technology that has come along at such an important time to help us cultivate global friendships that are focused on creating more peace and possibilities for everyone, all sentient beings, not even just people, but all the living things on our living planet. So thank you for making a space for that.
Thank you.
And for sharing all these interesting people with me.
Yeah.
Everyone. So I always look forward to that whenever there's a gathering where Amanda or Aaron or Renee Beth are going to be. So it's a really pleasure to meet all these new friends as well.
Thanks for being here.
I just, as a bystander, I want to I want to say, when we were talking about on one of the other podcasts talking about this, I was saying how powerful this book was to me. And while I shared Lori's sadness and grief about not having been parented this way or learned how to learn this way, and I said, you know, I'm learning how to reparent myself through this book. And then listening to you guys talk, I realized another level that I had wanted to be a teacher, but I had such bad experiences in school that by the time I walked out of John A. Rowland High School, I never wanted to set foot in a classroom again. And so what this, and I was raised with the idea that, you know, the teacher teaches, puts into, you know, and that's what I did to my kids, you know, train them up in the way they should go, you know, put everything in them. And anyway, I just realized sitting here that what I'm getting to do actually through this book that has just rocked my world is to re-educate myself, to not just reparent myself, but become my own teacher in a really powerful way. And I'm really grateful for the book and all y'all's perspective, because it's set here and it's really touched my heart. So thank you.
Thank you. Cheryl, any final?
Wow, Teddy, I was thinking the exact same thing about the reparenting. You articulated a feeling that I was having in that moment. So thank you for that. Because that's what I was thinking as I was thinking about like the stories in the book and, you know, kind of the Socratic method that can get used as a part of the journey. And, you know, my kids have been some of my greatest teachers and still to this day, like, and sometimes they teach you back the lesson you taught them that you're not acting right in the moment and they don't mind, you know, in their own way, letting you know. And I think that's a beautiful level of, you know, trust that gets to happen. And that's, you know, and which to me is very satisfying as a parent. It's very satisfying as a parent. And in the workplace, same thing. Like, I know I keep talking about Deming, but the reason I keep talking about him is because his stuff has been so profound for me. And it's the thing that has allowed me to not have to have all the answers myself. Because he called it a philosophy. And so it's philosophical. And we get to figure out the ways that we can deploy it that work for us in our lives, in our families, in our businesses. And, you know, and we have developed a framework. And because I trust that framework and those tools, it's easy for me to say, I don't know what the answer is, but we have these tools we can use. So let's use the tools together and see what we come up with. And then it takes the pressure off of everybody, because now all we have to do is just learn together how to use the tools together. And so if we can use the tools together, the rest of the learning will take care of itself. And, you know, that's profound. That's really been a profound thing for me. And so, and I use a lot of story when that was the thing that really hit me. The last thing I'll say, Amanda, is the thing that really hit me is how much I use story to help alleviate fear. Mm-hmm. In seminars, with teammates, when we're working together, with friends, collaborators, whatever it is, people that I mentor or people that mentor me, because my mentor uses story with me too, story from her own life to teach me. You know, by her experience, not by something that she heard somewhere else, but by her experience. And so story can do so much to eradicate fear. And boy, fear just stops all of us. It just can stop all of us dead in our tracks. So that was one of the big things that I was thinking about when I was like reading your book and just thinking about everything everybody talked about today, is that we can use story to help to replace, to help to overcome fears that we all have as human beings. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm, I love that.
So I thank everybody for that today.
Thank you. Erin, any final thoughts?
Yes. All I can say is that I super, super appreciate all of y'all's coming out for us and to do this and to talk about this. Even though I am interwoven with each and every one of you in some way and your paradigm and where you come from and your, you know, in terms of learning and learning styles and modalities and all of that, I still got so many new things out of this conversation. And thank you for the awesome, awesome impact you've all had on my life. And Deborah, I'll be sending you an NDA shortly about that video that we talked about. Just put it out there. Okay. And yeah.
I'm just thinking we can just share it in the Discord. It's fine, you know.
It's
just
fine.
Yeah.
It's fine.
You are responsible for much of his legal mind. Yes, yes, yes. Oh my goodness.
I do apologize for that. The legal and logical arguments that come out of Martral, I'm sure he it's much more effective with each year.
What I told him when I saw what he was doing with you, I was like, this is so awesome because there are two parts of your personality. There's two things in your DNA that have been that have gone wrong in generations past. One is the use of emotion and drama.
Yeah.
He got to use that in a very healthy way. And two is logic and debate. Mm-hmm. And he got to use that and learn both sides of it. So I was like, oh man, this is a perfect thing that just balanced it all out. Yeah. So, okay. Well, I want to thank you all again for being here. Thank you for spending the extra time. I know that our listeners and viewers are going to be so grateful for every little thing that you said and every big bit of wisdom that got relayed. So thank you to our listeners for being with us on this episode of Sips of Story Insanity. If you like what you heard, please consider subscribing, leaving us a review, maybe even sharing your own major education moment. Like, what is it that like made it or broke it for you? And stay tuned for Religion of Story releases on April 6th. That's a wrap for today. Thank you all.